The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Now we welcome our sister station Sky 99.5 FM and of course Sangeet 106.1 FM to the Lunchtime Doctor. And we welcome Dr. Brittany Dean after a long holiday. We
yes.
are back. How are
good
you doing?
Good afternoon, Tusker, and good afternoon to all our listeners out there. I hope everybody had a fun, enjoyable, long weekend, and of course, happy Eid to the Muslim community. And, you know, we had a very long weekend, but everybody's back out today. Mm-hmm. But that does not mean we have a really good show today. And today's actually World Autism Day. So we are going to be talking about autism because still not a lot of people are aware of it. What is the condition? And, you know, what are the implications of the condition and what we can do to help those that are suffering with autism lead, you know, healthier, happier lives. So today we are going to be talking about autism and, you know, the early signs and symptoms and anything else that is pertaining to the topic. But of course, while we are discussing this particular topic, I hope people feel free to, you know, ask of their medical questions, whether it's by calling in or even just sending their WhatsApps, and we can have a conversation.
Mm-hmm. What is autism and why is it referred to as a spectrum disorder?
So autism, or as it is known, autism spectrum disorder, is what we call a neurodevelopmental condition. So it is something that is going to affect how a person perceives the world, how they communicate, and how they interact with others as well. So what we would usually see in autism is really the differences that these persons would have in their social skills, the repetitive behaviors that they may exhibit, as well as differences in their speech and in some of their non-verbal communication as well. Now, autism is something that we will see presenting from very early childhood, and it's going to continue throughout that person's life, even though, you know, some symptoms can vary widely in its severity. The exact cause of autism is not fully understood, but it is believed to be a combination of genetic and even some environmental factors as well that affect a person's brain development. Now, it is called a spectrum disorder because autism usually affects individuals differently. So you can have mild symptoms or severe symptoms. And some people with autism may have strong verbal abilities, meaning that they can communicate well with other people, but they may struggle with social interactions, while other people may have non-verbal abilities, but they are going to require significant support to perform their daily activities. Now, the word spectrum itself highlights the diversity in the abilities and the challenges and even the strengths that are exhibited among autistic individuals. So some people or some individuals with autism, they may excel in areas like math or music or even their memory, but others may have intellectual disabilities or even sensory processing challenges. So it really is a neurodevelopmental condition, and it affects the way that a person can communicate with each other, how that person perceives their environment, as well as their social skills with one another as well. And it really is a complex disorder. So it's not just, you know, you can copy and paste a person with autism and you can copy and paste their signs and symptoms. Yes, there are certain things that may be similar in two persons with autism, but again, it is a complex disorder and each individual will exhibit their own unique characteristics.
What are the early signs and symptoms of autism in children?
So, early signs of autism typically appear between about 12 to 24 months, but they may be noticed even earlier in some cases. So what we would find is that parents would often report that their child is not even responding to their name, or they're avoiding eye contact, or they're showing, you know, delayed speech or even language development. Now, some children with autism, they may use gestures like pointing or waving or the non-verbal forms of communication. And those are key milestones in early communication. So persons with autism, they may not even exhibit these milestones. Now, others may show the repetitive behaviors. So they may rock back and forth. They may have hand flapping or even fixation on certain objects. Now, social difficulties tend to be one of the most noticeable signs. So a child with autism, they may prefer to play alone, or they may have difficulty understanding emotions, or they may even struggle with changes in their routine as well. Now, some children may experience what we call sensory sensitivities. So they may be highly reactive to sounds or lights or even textures. And in these cases, if the parents notice that, you know, their child is exhibiting, you know, signs of delay in their speech or their language development, or they're avoiding eye contact, or they are not understanding, or they have that difficulty in understanding emotions, or they may throw tantrums when you have changes in their routine, then it is important that parents do get early intervention, because that early intervention is going to become crucial, because therapies or like speech therapy or even behavioral interventions, they can significantly improve the outcomes for children on the spectrum.
All right, folks, and of course, yesterday being World Autism Day, we're talking about autism. Good afternoon to you, Doc Bases. In 30 minutes now after 12 o'clock, you're listening, of course, to the Lunchtime Doctor, Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1 and Sky 99.5, and we'll be taking a short break to ask any of your medical questions in just a short while. So how is autism diagnosed, and at what age can it typically be detected?
So autism is something that will typically be diagnosed based on behavioral observations and even developmental assessments rather than just one single medical test. So pediatricians will typically screen for autism during their well baby or their well child visits at around 18 and 24 months using certain standardized tests. So there's a test called the MCHAT, or the Modified Checklist for Autism in Toddlers. These are certain standardized tests that may be given to the child around that 12 to 24 months, whenever the parent's going to get their well baby checkup or even their vaccinations, etc. Now, if concerns arise for the pediatrician, then the child is going to be referred to a specialist. So a developmental pediatrician or even a neurologist or a child psychologist, so that we can get further evaluation on the child. Now, a formal diagnosis is actually made based on criteria that is outlined in a manual that we use for certain disorders, the DSM-5. And it usually that diagnosis is going to focus on two key areas. So there's social communication, or any sort of social or if they have restricted social communication skills, as well as repetitive behaviors. Now, most children are going to be diagnosed between 18 months and 4 years old, but some milder cases may not be identified until later on in childhood or even in adulthood as well. So early detection becomes very important, because it's going to allow for early intervention, and that can significantly improve a child's ability to develop communication and social skills as well.
And is it, of course, early detection of autism? Could it help?
So early detection of autism is definitely going to be crucial in the way that that child is going to communicate with the world, how they are going to have certain social communication skills, if they have repetitive behaviors that will help in mitigating some of those behaviors, as well as if they have concerns with changing their routine or changing their habits, and they throw tantrums or they exhibit certain behaviors in those cases, then the early interventions with the child psychologists or the pediatric neurologist or the developmental pediatricians, all of these things become very much important in their livelihood as they are learning new skills growing up.
Because I know sometimes, some parents are in denial. No parents wants to believe that, something may be wrong with their child. And some parents go through and, maybe you're telling them, look, something is wrong here. Some of them may have a tussle, maybe between mommy and daddy, or maybe somebody outside telling them, something is wrong here. Get this child checked up. And they're like, nah, the child is okay. And then, I've experienced that, personally. And then the child really ends up having autism.
Yes, exactly. So it is important that we get that education out there so that parents can recognize from an early age, or the earlier that it is recognized, the earlier the intervention can be made. And of course, the child may exhibit more milder symptoms as they get that early intervention, as opposed to severe symptoms.
All right. And what actually causes autism? Is it a genetic, environmental, or a combination of both?
So we don't have an exact cause of autism, but it is believed to be caused by a complex interaction of genetic and environmental factors that influences a person's brain development. So studies actually suggest that genetics play a major role, with more than probably 100 genes linked to autism risk. Now, if one child in a family has autism, there is a higher chance that a sibling may also be diagnosed, supporting that genetic basis. Now, certain genetic conditions, so things like Fragile X syndrome or Rett syndrome, which a lot of people may not have heard of, they are also known to be associated with autism. Now, genetics lay the foundation, but the environmental factors may influence whether that autism develops and how severe it becomes. So factors such as advanced parental age, premature birth, low birth weight, and even maternal infections during pregnancy have been linked to a higher risk. However, it is important for us to emphasize that, things like vaccines do not cause autism. Now, that is a claim that has been widely debunked by multiple large-scale scientific studies. Autism is a biological condition and not something caused by a parenting style or a social environment.
Okay, and are there any common myths about autism that need to be debunked?
So yes, there are many misconceptions about autism that can lead to, of course, stigma and misunderstanding of the spectrum disorder. Now, one of the biggest myths is that autistic individuals lack emotions or empathy. Now, in reality, many people with autism, they will experience emotions deeply, but they may express them differently or unique or in their own unique ways. They might struggle with reading social cues, but they can still form strong connections and feel love and compassion as well. Another harmful myth is that, like we just mentioned, autism is caused by vaccines, particularly the MMR vaccine, the measles, the mumps, rubella vaccine. And that claim actually originated from a fraudulent study in 1998, and that has since been debunked and retracted. There have been since multiple large-scale studies involving millions of children that have confirmed that vaccines do not cause autism. So spreading that myth has unfortunately led to lower vaccination rates and increases the risk of preventable diseases.
All right, I remember this actor Robert De Niro. He went on a campaign saying that, well, after his son took the vaccine, he noticed something was wrong.
So a lot of people tend to attribute certain things to vaccinations, etc. But sometimes it could just be a coincidence of timing, or it could be that they have had undiagnosed autism for years, and it has just been getting worse over time because they did not have any sort of intervention.
Mm-hmm. All right, okay. I know they used to say, like, back in the days, one of the arguments were, remember back in the days we used to get a separate vaccine for every single thing. It was measles, a separate vaccine, a yellow fever, there's that separate vaccine. But now they're sort of putting all the vaccines into one, and some people say it might be too powerful or potent for the baby. So to speak.
Well, everything is tested, and everything is, of course, evidence-based. So once it has been done, I think more the reason that these vaccines are being combined now is to prevent having to introduce, you know, different substances at different times, because certain vaccines, of course, when you get them, you do get a low-grade fever, etc., because you have this foreign particle coming into your body, so your body's immune system is going to try to fight it off. So a good reason for combining that these vaccines is so that people can go through this once without having to constantly be getting different types of vaccinations.
All right, folks, so we take a break right now to take some of your calls. Let's get some of your calls and some of your questions on any medical topic. Our lunchtime doctor like magic will answer them for you. 625-2257 and 627-3223. And, of course, feel free to WhatsApp us at 306-1065. You can send your questions to other frequencies, Sangeet 106.1 and Sky 99.5, and they will send your questions right to us here in studio, right? First question on the WhatsApp. Doctor, I sometimes have a joint pain in my right arm from time to time. It comes and it goes. I'm a 49-year-old male. What could be the cause of that?
So having joint pain, it can be just something musculoskeletal, meaning it could be early onset osteoarthritis, you know, that wear and tear of the cartilage in the joints. Commonly, people will experience it in their shoulder or their elbow. It could be something like tendonitis, where you have inflammation of the tendons themselves. And it can be even nerve-related causes. So something like carpal tunnel syndrome, compression of that nerve in the wrist can sometimes lead to arm pain. Or sometimes people can have poor circulation. But the important thing to note is that, you know, you need to avoid any sort of activities that aggravate the pain. You can even have ice or heat therapy. Ice if you find that it is inflamed or it is swelling, and heat to combat any sort of stiffness in the arm and to get some sort of blood flowing, even over-the-counter pain medications. But again, that needs to be taken as prescribed, and compression if needed. So a brace or support may help to alleviate some of the stress on the arm and some of the pain. And if you happen to notice any sort of swelling, alleviating the arm or the joint itself as well. And even some physiotherapy may help, some stretching and strengthening exercises.
And let's take a call. Thanks for holding, caller. Good afternoon. Hello, good afternoon.
What is it you say? To remove kidney stone.
Could you repeat that, sir?
The easiest way to remove kidney stones.
Yeah, the easiest way to remove kidney stones.
So it depends on the size of the kidney stones. Remember, some kidney stones are very small, so they can pass naturally. You know, around 80% of the small kidney stones are going to pass on their own within a few weeks, but you're still going to experience some pain because as that stone moves through your urinary tract, it is going to cause some sort of, some sort of irritation to the lining of these tracts. So drink plenty of fluids, take your pain relievers, And, you know, if you go to your doctor, they may even prescribe certain medications. Now, if you have a medium-sized stone, sometimes it can pass naturally. Sometimes it may require some sort of medical intervention. So there is something that can be done where they use sound waves to actually break up this stone into smaller pieces that pass naturally. But for the very large stones, those are unlikely to pass on their own. So sometimes they may need to do a small incision on the back and this stone is removed directly, or they may even use a laser to break up this stone through a scope. So it really is dependent on the size of the stone. What I would suggest is if you are experiencing kidney stones, make sure that you go to your doctor, get yourself properly checked out, so they will let you know what the size of the stone is, and depending on what imaging studies that they do, and they will let you know if you can pass it out naturally or if they will give you any sort of medication or any sort of intervention for it.
All right, folks, you're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor. Another question: is it okay for a pregnant mother to drink a glass of wine?
No, we always tell women to stay away from alcohol. Even if it is one glass of wine, we definitely say to stay away. If you don't know that you are pregnant, say within the first month or so, and you've had a glass of wine, it may not harm the baby fully. But as soon as you find out that you are pregnant, you definitely need to stop drinking.
Another question here. Hi, Doc. What is the best way to get out of bed in the morning?
So, I mean, this is going to be dependent, or this is something very individualized. I would say that for me personally, I mean, everybody loves their bed, right? It really is going to be a task if you like to sleep longer. But as soon as your alarm sets off, I would say getting out of bed is definitely one time is definitely the best way to go, because you are going to get yourself feeling a lot more sleepy than usual. But there are safe and effective ways or effective methods for some persons to get out of bed, because remember, it is going to be dependent on your age and your health and any sort of existing conditions as well. So if you have back pain or dizziness or joint issues, so you can start by, you know, turning onto your side. And that is going to reduce any sort of strain on the back and start to engage your core muscles. So place your top hand on the bed for support and push yourself up. Sit for a few seconds. This will allow your body to adjust, especially if you experience dizziness or low blood pressure or even vertigo. And take a few steps or a few deep breaths before standing. And when you're standing, make sure that you're standing up slowly, so that you don't experience any sort of instability or toppling over, etc. Now, if you have back pain, you want to try to log rule, keep your back straight while you're turning. If you have dizziness, you want to move more slowly. And of course, for the seniors that have a bit of instability or a bit of problems with balance, have a bed rail or a walker for added stability as well.
Another question coming in here. Good day, Doc. I had a sciatica pain. I was taking medication for it, and now the pain left my back, and it's now under the right cheek, all the way down to the calf. My third and fourth toe even feels a bit numb.
So I'm a little bit confused. The pain left went to the right side?
The sciatica pain taking medication left my back, and it's now under the right cheek, right? All the way down to the calf.
So the lower back pain could be something different. Sciatica pain is actually the pain that will move from your glute area straight down to the leg. So what you will probably be being treated for was lower back pain. Now, yes, it can start in the lower back as well, but if it was not radiating down the legs, more than likely it was not sciatica pain. So this pain that you are now experiencing is sciatica pain. And there are several things that you can do to manage your sciatica pain. And, you know, you want to avoid prolonged sitting for you know, around 30 to 60 minutes. Take those breaks and move around every 30 to 60 minutes. Sleep with some support. So a pillow between your knees for people who are sleeping at the side, or under the knees for people who sleep on their back. Use some ice packs. So for about 15 to 20 minutes, have that ice pack to reduce any sort of inflammation on the right cheek, and even heat packs to help to relax any sort of tight muscles and improve your blood flow. Gentle stretches and exercises. And for some people, you know, over-the-counter medications may help. But I would always suggest that you go to your doctor, let them recommend something for you if the pain is very severe. And physical therapy, a structured exercise program, will help to strengthen that lower back and improve your mobility as well.
All right, folks, we return to our questions here. Right back to our topic. Of course, of autism. First of all, let me let you know this. On the road with Jameson, right, with the four key nutrients, zinc and boosting immunity, biotin for enhancing your hair, skin and nails, right, our Power for Men formula for increased performance, and vitamin B12 for that energy boost. Fuel your body with Jameson, here for your health. All right, we'll get back to some of your questions. Folks, keep sending them to 306-1065. Lunchtime Doctor with Dr. Brittany Dean. Right, so is there a link between, well, we spoke about that, the vaccines and the autism. This is widely been debunked. How does autism affect communication, social interactions, and behavior?
So autism affects communication in a lot of different ways. So people with autism, they may experience speech delays or difficulty with understanding nonverbal cues. Some children may be nonverbal, but others may speak fluently, but they may struggle with that flow of the conversation itself, or understanding things like sarcasm or even figurative language. Many autistic individuals, they prefer direct, literal communication rather than anything to do with implied meanings. Now, social interactions for persons with autism, it can also be challenging. People with autism, they may have that difficulty in making eye contact or reading facial expressions or even understanding social norms. They may prefer routine and predictability, and changes in their environment or their schedule may cause them a lot of stress. Now, some persons with autism, they may even engage in repetitive behaviors. So hand flapping or even lining up objects. And that may be a way to self-soothe or process any sort of sensory information as well.
All right, let's go to another question. And what are some challenges that people with autism face in a daily life?
So autistic individuals, they may actually experience sensory sensitivities, meaning that they may be overly sensitive to loud noises or bright lights or even certain textures. And that can make environments like school or even shopping malls very overwhelming for them. So many of them, they may also struggle with social interactions, and that can lead to misunderstandings or even difficulties in forming friendships. Employment for persons with autism can also pose a challenge, because traditional workplaces will often rely on unspoken social rules that may be difficult or for autistic individuals to navigate. However, a lot of persons with autism, they excel in structured, detail-oriented tasks, and they thrive in the careers that will align with their strengths. So greater awareness and workspace accommodations will be able to help support autistic individuals in reaching their full potential.
And what are some challenges that people with autism face in daily life?
So again, they may have those sensitivities to certain triggers. So things like the bright lights, or if they hear a loud noise, or even something like a change in one thing in their daily routine. So that is why sometimes parents with autism, they schedule out their child's day, because it is very important to a person with autism that they follow a certain schedule. If they deviate from that schedule, that may cause them a lot of unwanted stress. And again, they may excel in more structured, detail-oriented tasks, and they will tend to thrive in the workplaces that will align with their particular strengths. So, I mean, a lot of persons may, with autism, they may struggle, again, with that social cues or that social communication, but they do thrive in other tasks, especially in things like organization or things that are structured or even things that are very much detailed.
And in terms of schools, can a child with autism go to a regular school, or should be they go to a specific school? Are there specific schools for autism, autistic children?
So there are certain schools that cater to children that are autism, that do have autism, but children with autism attending a regular public school, it may pose some sort of a challenge for both the child and the student, and sometimes even for the parent, depending on how severe the child is experiencing certain symptoms. Children with autism can attend their public school, but the level of support that they need is going to be dependent on the severity of their condition as well as their individual needs. So it is on a case-by-case basis. But again, there are certain schools that are catered for children with autism.
All right, and are there strengths and unique abilities commonly seen in autistic individuals?
So while autism does come with its challenges, a lot of individuals on the spectrum will also exhibit unique strengths and unique abilities. So some autistic individuals may have exceptional memory, excelling in things like recalling facts or numbers or detailed information, but others may have a deep focus on specific subjects. So that may make them highly skilled in areas like mathematics or music or art or even computer programming. Pattern recognition and logical thinking are often seen as the strengths in persons with autism, and that will make autistic individuals excel in fields that require problem solving and attention to detail, such as engineering or data analysis. And others may demonstrate honesty and reliability and deep loyalty. And of course, all of these traits are what makes them great friends and colleagues. So focusing on their strengths and providing the appropriate support, this will allow autistic individuals to thrive in both their personal and, of course, their professional lives as well.
Hi, folks, let's take an opportunity now for you to ask any of your medical questions, right? 12:39 on time. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, Freedom 106.5 FM, Sankey 106.1 and Sky 99.5 on number 627-3223 or 625-2257 on WhatsApp us at 3061065. Even though we're talking about autism, you could feel free to ask any of your medical questions. Let's go with this one.
Basically, the person with his child take a pain which is moving. Through experience, I'll advise him to get a lawn tennis ball, place it under the hips, and roll it to the right, and move it to the roll to the left, roll to the right, and roll to the left. And they'll get a great ease with that.
Tennis ball, okay.
Yeah, so that is actually a very good advice from that person. So that does help to sort of loosen up the muscle itself. If the muscles are tight, it may be painful initially. They may experience a lot of pain because a tennis ball is definitely something that is hard. And if you're putting all of your weight on it, especially if you are already experiencing pain, it may actually, you know, be a bit painful for you. So it's something akin to like foam rolling when your muscles are very tight and sore. So, I mean, it can work for some individuals, but it is important that you do it you do it in the appropriate way.
Right, the tennis ball seems to be very therapeutic for many many uses.
Yes, it is actually. I actually use it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so somebody saying, is ADHD and autism the same?
No. So ADHD is what we call attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and autism is autism spectrum disorder. Now, with ADHD, the main challenge is difficulty with paying attention and impulsivity and hyperactivity. So these kids are easily distracted. They have trouble focusing on tasks. They may actually be overly social or impulsive in interactions, but they understand social cues. And in terms of communication, some of them may talk excessively. They may even interrupt conversations, and they are often fidgety without any sort of strict routine. With autism, they have challenges with social communication and repetitive behaviors. And while the ADHD kids, they may be easily distracted, with autism, they tend to focus intensely on specific interests, but they may struggle with the flexible thinking. And again, they will struggle with the understanding social cues, and they may even avoid eye contact, or they may prefer routines. So it really is a big difference between ADHD and autism disorder. They are not the same.
I know sometimes they said in terms of therapy, having a pet, or maybe even, I don't know, other children to play with. Does that help somebody with develop with autism?
It can help in terms of their social communication and understanding social cues, as well as understanding human emotions. But again, it should be on the basis of being recommended by their specific therapist, because each person or each individual with autism is going to have their own unique challenges. So if social communication is a challenge for that particular person, they may recommend, you know, having a companion for that child. However, there are some children who may have to be eased into that because they will not be able to interact with others very easily.
Mm-hmm. What about a speech therapist? Can a speech therapist help?
Definitely. That is actually one of the therapies that we do recommend for children with autism, especially if they have speech delays or if they prefer nonverbal communication only and they struggle with having a conversation flow. So a speech therapist can definitely be advantageous in that situation.
All right. Somebody is saying, yes, Steve Jobs, son of Apple, one of the world's greatest persons. He was an autistic person. I did not even know that. And Elon Musk is slightly autistic. Wow.
So I actually did not know Steve Jobs had autism. I don't think he was officially diagnosed. Mm-hmm. And with Elon Musk, he was not diagnosed with autism, but there is there's a syndrome called Asperger's syndrome, where he publicly stated that he had, which is now considered part of the ASD or the autism spectrum disorder. And Asperger's syndrome is now classified as a level one on the autism spectrum disorder, meaning that these individuals will have mild autism, but they don't have significant speech delays or intellectual disabilities. So, for him, it works in very good ways because he will have deep focus and special interests. So his passion for space and AI and even sustainable energy. And sometimes he may have direct or awkward social interactions. If you've ever watched any of his interviews, sometimes it is a little bit awkward, but he is always direct in his speech. And he approaches problems in unconventional ways, which of course, fuels innovation.
All right, so how important, we just mentioned about the therapies, speech therapy. What other therapies and interventions are available for people with autism?
So there's no single treatment for autism, but there are various therapies and interventions that can help individuals develop their communication and their social and their behavioral skills as well. So applied behavioral analysis is one of the most widely used therapies, and that focuses on reinforcing positive behaviors and reducing those behaviors that may be disruptive. Speech therapy, like we just spoke about, can help autistic individuals improve their verbal and nonverbal communication, while things like occupational therapy will help with their daily living skills and sensory processing challenges. Social skills training and cognitive behavioral therapy, those two are also beneficial, particularly when we're looking at older children and adults who will need support in navigating relationships and emotions. Some autistic individuals benefit from assistive technology such as communication devices and visual schedules, so that will help with their organization and their communication skills as well. But it is important to note that early intervention is definitely key, and because starting that therapy in early childhood will significantly improve the outcomes of that child.
All right, and like you just said, how important is early intervention in improving outcomes for autistic individuals?
So that early intervention is critical because it significantly improves their social communication and their behavioral skills as well. Research actually shows that earlier therapy and support that begins, of course, earlier in childhood, then the progress becomes much greater in helping that child learn to communicate and engage socially and, of course, develop their independence. Many children who receive early intervention actually show improved language skills, social adaptability, and improved academic performances. So that therapies that we talked about, the ABA or the Applied Behavioral Analysis, and speech therapy and occupational therapy are most effective when they're started before the age of 5, when the brain is still highly adaptable. Now, even if autism is diagnosed later, interventions at any age can still be beneficial. The goal of early intervention is not to cure autism, but to provide the individuals with the tools and the strategies that they will need to survive in a world that may not have always been designed for them.
All right, folks, just about 11 minutes or 12 minutes away from 1 o'clock. You're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor, Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, and Sky 99.5. And how can parents, teachers, and caregivers best support a child with autism?
So this is very important because support for an autistic child is going to begin with us understanding their unique needs and, of course, their unique abilities and strengths. Parents can create structured routines using things like visual aids or for communication, and being patient with the sensory sensitivities as well. Learning about autism and connecting with support groups will also help the families navigate the challenges and, of course, celebrate the successes of raising an autistic child. Teachers can support autistic students by adapting the classroom environments, for example, offering quiet spaces, using clear instructions, and providing extra time for transitions. Caregivers should also encourage social interaction in ways that are comfortable for that child. So small group activities or interest-based plays. Now, by working together, parents, educators, and caregivers will help autistic children build confidence and develop their life skills.
All right, and how can schools and workplaces create a more inclusive environment for people with autism?
So schools can foster inclusion by implementing what we call individualized education plans. These cater to the needs of autistic students. Teachers can use visual schedules, sensory-friendly classrooms, and alternative communication methods to help those students succeed. Schools should also focus on anti-bullying initiatives and, of course, educating peers about autism to promote understanding and acceptance of those individuals. Now, in the workplaces, inclusivity can be improved by providing clear instructions or offering flexibility in the work environments and, of course, avoiding unnecessary social pressures. Employers can support their autistic employees by allowing things for, like, quiet workspaces or providing written instructions instead of only verbal communications, and, of course, recognizing their strengths in attention to detail and deep focus. Small adjustments can make a wide range of differences in allowing these autistic individuals to excel in both school and, of course, the professional settings as well.
And before we get ready to take a couple more questions, what should the general public know about interacting with individuals on the autism spectrum?
So the most important thing for the public to understand is that autistic individuals experience the world differently, but they are just as capable of forming relationships, communicating, and contributing to society as a whole. Now, people with autism, they may struggle with eye contact or sarcasm or small talk, but this does not mean that they are uninterested or unfriendly. Being patient and understanding in their unique way of communicating can help us to foster better interactions. It is also important to avoid making assumptions. Some autistic individuals, they may be nonverbal, but they still fully understand what is being said, while others may be highly articulate, but struggle with the social interactions. Respecting their boundaries, not forcing interactions, and accommodating sensory sensitivities, for example, avoiding the loud noises or the sudden changes, will help to make social interactions a lot more comfortable for everyone involved. So the key is to treat autistic individuals with the same respect and inclusivity as everyone else.
So for some people with autism, like you say, it depends on how they grew up, but can people with autism be considered dangerous at times?
I don't think that we should class persons with autism in that sort of dangerous setting. They are no more a risk to persons than the average person. People with autism, they tend to stay to themselves, and they're usually not confrontational. So they are possibly less dangerous than the average population. They will tend to retreat and be in their own little bubble, as opposed to going out and interacting with anybody else. So I don't think that anything like any sort of confrontation is more likely to be seen in a person with autism.
All right, let's take this question here.
Based what I noticed with autistic children, they take a liking to horses. And another therapy is fishes in the aquarium. They also take a liking to that too. Mm-hmm. Listening.
All right, have you ever noticed that, Doc? Or any studies or that?
So, actually, it's not particularly the horses or the fishes, etc. They tend to fixate on one thing, and they become a little bit obsessive over it. So persons or children with autism, they may tend to develop that liking to horses. And, you know, their parents may buy them books with horses. They may be researching horses. They may want to go see horses. Their bed sheet may have horses on them. They may be very much compelled to be attracted to this one particular thing. But it's not just horses or fish. It can be anything at all. It can be plants, it can be bats, it can be anything. They can become fixated on.
Okay. And are there any, well, misconceptions or stereotypes about autism that needs to change?
So I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that all autistic people are the same. Autism is a spectrum, meaning no two autistic individuals have identical traits. Some are highly independent, while others may need or require lifelong support. Another myth is that autistic people lack emotions or empathy, but in reality, many autistic individuals, they feel emotions deeply, but they may express themselves differently from the average population. Another harmful stereotype is that autistic individuals are all either geniuses or completely nonverbal and dependent. Some autistic individuals have exceptional talents, but most have a mix of strengths and challenges. Finally, I think it's important to challenge the stigma that autism is a disease that needs to be fixed. Autism is a neurodevelopmental difference. It's not something that needs a cure. Instead, us as society, we should focus on acceptance and support and, of course, accommodation so that autistic individuals can thrive both in their personal lives and in their professional lives as well.
All right, as you just get it to wrap up, though, 2.5 minutes, our final question inside the lunchtime doctor today, World Autism Day. What should the general public know about interacting with individuals on the autism spectrum for the final time?
So I think that it's important for us to understand that these individuals, they just see the world differently, but that does not mean that they're not capable of contributing to society or having a relationship or communicating. Yes, they may struggle with certain things or certain cues like eye contact or small talk, but that does not mean that they are uninterested or they are not friendly to interact with. I think it's important for us to be understanding, and we have to be patient of their unique ways of communicating so that we can help to foster better interactions between us. And of course, we need to avoid making assumptions. Yes, some autistic individuals are nonverbal, but they still fully understand what is being said. Now, others may be highly articulate and struggle with social interactions. And there are some people who will require that lifelong support and that support of their parents or even support groups, etc. But it is important for us to respect their boundaries and accommodate their sensory sensitivities and not force any sort of interactions with them. So that can make our social interactions with them a lot more comfortable. And again, the key is to treat these individuals with the same respect and the same inclusivity as we treat anybody else.
And of course, let's take a final call here. Quickly, hello, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad we're talking about this topic. I have a friend who has an autistic child, and he attends primary school, and the teacher is totally insensitive about the child and his situation. Mm-hmm. The students in the class, they bully the child, and you know, the teacher wouldn't be, wouldn't sensitize the class about it. They pick on him, they bully him, they take away snacks. And the teacher himself is really rough with the child. He hits him, he tells him all kind of things, that he's stupid, he's dumb, he can't learn anything.
That child's still good.
Yeah, I think it's time for the parents to take the child out of the school.
It's a public school, it's not a private school.
Okay, but the parent needs to take the child out of the school.
Yeah, well, I'm saying is that we have to sensitize these teachers. Our teachers have to sensitize these students as well when they come into the class.
Yeah.
Because if we have a new baby coming into the house,
agree.
We will so sensitize them with the baby, and this is what we need to do or not do, or what is acceptable or not. So
right.
If you have a child like that in your class, you need to do the same thing as well.
Yeah. I mean, it really is terrible. That a teacher now will be encouraging that kind of behavior.
Exactly, and this is why having days like this is very important, mm-hmm. and sensitizing the public to what these conditions are mm-hmm. becomes very important as well. But not everybody is going to accept it at once, and it is always better to take the child out of an environment like that than forcing the teacher to see something that he or she does not want to see. So for the betterment of the child, I definitely, I hope that the parents take it upon themselves to take that child out of that school. And if the child needs better learning environments, there are support groups in Trinidad that will help in, you know, navigating those the schools that autistic children need to be going to.
All right. Thank you very much, Doc. You went a little over time there. You've been listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1 and Sky 99.5. Tune in tomorrow again. Well, no, tomorrow is Thursday. Sorry.
Next week.
A short week, short week. Tune in next week, Monday. And of course,
see
do enjoy
next week.
The
yes.
rest of your day.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.